Hello, today is July the 2nd. My name is Kayla Verhoeven, and we're going to go ahead and start off today with part one of the pantograph. Name change for vendors. Boutique business aims to fill gap left by the painted tree by Matisse Janique 2 hours ago. Bloomington. When Painted Tree Boutique abruptly closed its Bloomington store this spring, dozens of vendors were left scrambling to pack up booths, recover merchandise, and figure out where to go next. Now, a local small business owner is trying to give some of them a new home to sell their antiques, collectibles, artworks, and other goods. Main Collective Boutiques is planned for the former Joann Fabric space at 1719 East Empire Street in Bloomington, where owner Ashley Witten hopes to create a vendor-based retail space similar to the one Painted Tree offered, but with a local owner behind it. When we heard that Painted Tree was closing, we knew there were going to be a lot of vendors losing their home, Witten said. We wanted to provide them with a safe space. Witten, who owns Maine Society Salon and Spa at 1605 Morrissey Drive, number 105, Bloomington, said the idea grew out of her experience hosting vendor shows and working with other small businesses through the salon. Painted Tree Boutique, a franchise of nationwide businesses located at 1500 East Empire Street, closed in April after vendors received an email notifying them that the store would shut down. The closure shocked many small business owners who rented booths there, including some who had recently signed leases, built displays, or paid deposits. My first reaction was that it was very heartbreaking, Witten said. There were people crying, and they didn't know what to do, where they were going, because this is a full-time job for some of them. Witten said she was at Painted Tree when the closure news spread. She began handing out her contact information to vendors and considering whether there was a way to preserve the retail model many had relied on. I have the business and I have the connections, and so let's do something for the community, Witten said. Someone has to. At first, Witten said she looked into taking over Painted Tree's lease, but that was not possible because of the company's bankruptcy. Instead, she found another vacant retail space nearby, the former Joann Fabric store. The new space still has remnants of its former use, including fixtures and Joann branding. Witten said the Joann logos will be removed, though some fixtures may be incorporated into the new boutique layout. The plan is clear to The plan is to clear out parts of the building and rebuild the interior with vendor booths. We're trying to correct Painted Tree's failures and give these people a home to sell their belongings, Witten said. That's my biggest goal. Maine Collective Boutiques is expected to operate on a similar vendor model to Painted Tree, allowing some businesses to rent spaces and sell products without the cost of opening a full storefront. Witten said she is not trying to raise rents on the vendors and wants to match what Painted Tree had offered. My biggest thing is to give them a home, Witten said. I'm not trying to raise their rates or make them pay more. I just want to provide them a safe space. So far, Witten said 73 vendors have committed to returning through Maine Collective Boutiques. The business is working with the general contractor to finalize floor plans and begin pre-leasing spaces. Witten said the goal is to open soon, likely in early or mid-July, depending on how quickly the space can be prepared. For vendors, the new store represents both opportunity and caution. Michaela Hutcherson, owner of Polly's, was a vendor at Painted Tree from the time the Bloomington store opened until it closed. Her business sells women's clothing, accessories, and small gifts. Hutcherson said she was working her full-time job as a nurse when she learned Painted Tree was closing. I was honestly very surprised, Hutcherson said. I was initially shocked. The surprise quickly turned into urgency. We had heard rumors that a lot of the business owners or whoever owned these spaces were going to lock the doors, so it was a mad dash to get everything out, Hutcherson said. She said she was one of the luckier vendors because she had continued receiving payments after Painted Tree changed its payment system in the fall. Others, she said, had gone months without payments. There were several vendors who had not received their money since October, Hutcherson said. She said it has not received her final payout from April or her security deposit, but like other vendors, she recently received correspondence about filing as a creditor. I don't foresee any of us really getting paid out, Hutcherson said. After Painted Tree closed, Hutcherson was able to move some of her business into Mowgli Outfitters in Towanda Plaza in Bloomington. Other local vendors found temporary spaces in shops, markets, or their own stores. But for many, the closure left a gap. Painted Tree had offered something vendors still valued, even after the abrupt ending, a way to sell in a brick-and-mortar setting without taking on the overhead of a traditional storefront. That is the space Main Collective Boutiques is trying to step into. Witten said her store will be different because it is locally and small business owned, not part of a national chain. We are small business owned, Witten said. We're not a company. We're not a corporation. We're keeping it small. Hutcherson said that local connection matters, especially after vendors struggled to reach someone at Painted Tree when problems arose. Still, she said many former Painted Tree vendors are understandably cautious. I hear mixed reviews, Hutcherson said. Because of how Painted Tree ended on such a negative note, everybody is apprehensive and nervous. Some vendors were hobbyists who had turned their work into small businesses. Others relied on the store as a meaningful part of their income. Many had invested in inventory, display, and booth setups before the closure. They are excited, but they also have a lot of reservations, which is natural when it's your main income and you have spent so much money investing into your business, Hutcherson said. For Witten, Main Collective Boutiques is all about helping small businesses recover from a closure that left many of them without a clear next step. I'm a small business owner, and I wanted someone to give me a chance, Witten said. That's what I'm doing for them. Moving on now to some news in the weather. Doctors urge the caution in heat. Stay cool, hydrated, alert, and lemon exposure by D. Jack Alkire 2 hours ago. Dr. Isaac Tudor, emergency medicine physician, recommended several ways to stay safe during a summer heat wave on June 30th of 2026, including staying indoors, taking breaks from the heat, and drinking water or sports drinks frequently. Weather. Bloomington. As an extreme heat wave moves across Illinois, physicians are urging residents to exercise extra caution. That just means staying indoors, staying in an air-conditioned area, being in the shade as much as possible, and drinking water, said Dr. Isaac Tudor, an emergency medicine physician with Carl Bromine Medical Center in Normal. Heat index values are expected to reach up to 110 degrees this week, while temperatures remain in the 90s, according to the National Weather Service. Prolonged exposure to the hot and humid temperatures can lead to heat-related illnesses like heat exhaustion, but the biggest concern is heat stroke, Tudor said. If your body heats up enough to where your organs start dysfunctioning, specifically your central nervous system like your brain, that can be deadly, he said. People working outdoors should take frequent breaks out of the heat, drink water or sports drinks, and look out for one another, Tudor added. Stages of heat sickness. Heat sickness occurs in three stages: heat stress, heat exhaustion, and heat stroke, said Dr. Brian Curtis, Vice President and Chief Medical Officer of the OSF Medical Group. Get a little heat stress. You're a little hot. You don't feel good, right? You may be sweating a lot. You just feel hot, warm, he said. Then you get into heat exhaustion. Those people are profusely sweating. They're beet red. They can even be a little confused, and they could have muscle cramps. Both heat stress and heat exhaustion can be treated by getting out of the heat, either into the shade or indoors, drinking water or sports drinks with electrolytes, and applying cooling measures like getting into a cool shower or putting ice packs under the armpits to lower the body's core temperature, Curtis said. Heat stroke requires emergency medical intervention, he said. When someone experiences heat stroke, they're not sweating anymore. They're usually confused. They're not responsive, Curtis said. And their skin is hot, hot to the touch. So their body temperature would be anywhere from 102 to 106 degrees Fahrenheit. If you find somebody that is in a heat stroke, you call 911 and you try to move them into a cooler environment if you can. Tudor emphasized that untreated heat stroke is often fatal. If someone's having heat stroke and they don't get to the emergency department, they'll probably die, unfortunately, Tudor said. How to cool. The human body regulates temperature in the heat by sweating, Curtis said. Sweat glands excrete water, which evaporates off the skin, pulling heat away from the body. But humid environments, where water is less likely to evaporate, hinder the cooling. The problem you have is when you're in a very humid environment, it's just harder for the sweat to evaporate, Curtis said. It still does, but it just doesn't evaporate to the same extent that it would in a drier climate. One way to help is to change into dry clothes. If someone is sweating so much that their clothes become saturated with water, a change of clothing could allow some of that evaporation to continue, Curtis said. People can also simulate this evaporative cooling indoors, Tudor said. If you have a mister device or like a misting fan that can cool you down quickly, he said. Basically, mist your skin and then stand by a fan that will help cool off by evaporation. Taking a cool bath or shower or adding ice packs to the armpits or groin will also help lower the body's core temperature, both physicians said. But a person experiencing heat sickness should never take an ice bath, Curtis said. The human body reacts to extreme cold by pulling blood from the extremities towards the internal organs, a process called vasoconstriction, which is why the hands and feet tend to get colder during the winter, he said, because blood is kept keeping the core warm. Vasoconstriction with an ice bath will make the heat sickness worse, Curtis said. Your goal is to try to dissipate the heat, not concentrate it. And so, dumping a bunch of heat into a core that's already overheated can actually exacerbate things. The most vulnerable. Sunscreen, long sleeves, and wide-brimmed hats should be worn when outdoors to prevent sunburn, Tudor said. While repeat sunburns can lead to cancer down the road, sunburns also dehydrate the body faster. Your skin is really your barrier to the outside world, and that helps you maintain your fluid status, Tudor said. And if that's burned and dysfunctional, then you can lose a lot of fluid that way, and you can become dehydrated a lot faster. It can also cause things like infection. Sunscreen is especially important for young children, he said. They are much more susceptible to sunburns because they don't really have a lot of sun exposure, and usually their skin is very sensitive. So sunscreen and shade for them is super important, as well as hydration, because their metabolisms are just much faster than ours, Tudor said. The elderly population is also at a high risk for heat sickness for two main reasons. They don't thermoregulate as well, and so that means they don't cool themselves or heat themselves well, Curtis said. So they're more prone to cold and warm exposure. The other reason Curtis has seen is that many elderly folk intentionally dehydrate themselves to avoid going to the bathroom, he said. Finally, Curtis said no one should be left in the car outside, child, adult, or pet. Nobody stays in the car. This is incredibly important at this time, he said. Moving on now to some more news and weather. The storms lead to disaster declaration. Illinois, by Brendan Moore, Capital News Illinois, 2 hours ago. Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker on Tuesday issued a state disaster proclamation for 11 counties ravaged by severe weather this spring and early summer. The proclamation covers Kankakee, McLean, Stevenson, and Winnebago counties for severe weather events that took place in March and April, and Coles Cook, Effingham, Jefferson, LaSalle, Warren, and Woodford counties for storm events over the past month. It comes amid a record stretch of severe weather in the land of Lincoln. Midway through the year, the National Weather Service has already confirmed 173 tornadoes in Illinois, the most recorded in a single year. Several communities have also sustained damage from flooding, hail, and straight-line winds. Illinois has faced unprecedented severe weather this year, and I remain committed to supporting every community, business, and family as they rebuild, Pritzker said in a statement. As communities recover, we remember the lives that were lost and hold their families and loved ones in our thoughts during this difficult time. Pritzker is scheduled to visit Effingham and Jefferson counties on Wednesday. An EF3 tornado ripped through the area on June 17th, injuring two people and damaging dozens of structures. He surveyed damage in Coles County earlier this month after an EF2 tornado hit. The governor also invited Kankakee County in March days after an EF3 tornado tore through there and killed three people. The proclamation frees up additional state resources and personnel for response and recovery operations and can facilitate requests for the state and federal disaster relief. Federal resources. Communities in impacted counties, for example, can now apply for up to $250,000 through the Community Development Block Grant, or the CDBG, Disaster Response Program, to assist with cleanup, debris, and removal and public infrastructure repair. Pritzker said last week that he expects the state to seek additional federal assistance for the June tornadoes, either through the Federal Emergency Management Agency or Small Business Administration, through state officials that are still working with local officials to assess damage and determine whether it meets eligibility for federal assistance programs. State and federal agencies completed their damage assessments in Kankakee on March the 30th, but the state did not ultimately seek FEMA assistance though the SBA did approve low-interest emergency loans for small businesses with uninsured damage. Pritzker told reporters in Chicago last week that applying for a federal disaster declaration doesn't help if there's no way that the damage estimate will get anywhere near the number necessary to qualify. The governor was critical of the Trump administration for cutting back funding for disaster relief and seemingly denying it for quote-unquote political reasons. A Politico analysis found Democrat-led states saw just 23% of their disaster requests granted in the first year of Trump's second term, compared to 89% for their Republican counterparts. They've raised the thresholds for getting support. They've made it harder for the communities to get support, Pritzker said. It's quite disappointing, and I continue to be an advocate for maintaining the FEMA funds that were available prior, because unfortunately, climate change has now brought more disasters on a more frequent basis. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service that distributes state government coverage to hundreds of news outlets statewide. It is funded primarily by the Illinois Press Foundation and the Robert R. McCormick Foundation. Now moving on to a Nation and World special report. Happy birthday, America. At 2:50, Nation may be too divided to celebrate as one, by Tim Reed, Joseph Axe, and Hannah Beyer. July 2nd of 2026, updated 2 hours ago. Doylestown, Pennsylvania. Betsy Halsey, 63, still has memorabilia from America's 1976 bicentennial in her childhood bedroom at her parents' home. But the retired teacher is so appalled by President Donald Trump that she refuses to celebrate the country's 250th birthday. I don't want to be at the same party with people feeling enthusiastic about where our country is going, said Halsey, a frequent Democratic voter who lives in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. Dan Morazzo, 70, a Republican and laundromat owner who lives in nearby Langhorne Manor, is ready to celebrate, believing America under Trump is thriving. The poorest person in America has a better lifestyle than some of the richest people in the rest of the world, he said. As the U.S. prepares for its semi-quincentennial, the 250th anniversary of its July 4, 1776, Declaration of Independence from Great Britain, political divisions are testing what is traditionally a unifying summer ritual. With Trump stamping his imprint on the official commemoration in his second White House term marked by polarizing policies on immigration, the economy, and foreign affairs, many Americans are struggling with how to separate the politics from the pageantry. The very idea of celebrating has become political and partisan, said Beverly Gage, a Yale University historian. What is striking about our moment is how widespread the pessimism seems to be. 1 in 5 Americans say they won't celebrate Independence Day this year, including 25% of Democrats and 8% of Republicans, according to a Reuters IPSOS poll. 2 in 5 do not believe the country will survive another 250 years. To better understand how Americans feel about the anniversary, Reuters invited more than 24 residents in Bucks County, where Halsey and Marizzo live. Once a political backwater, Bucks County today is a microcosm of the cultural and partisan schisms convulsing the USA deeply divided region in a critical electoral swing state, Pennsylvania. It is a county Trump won by fewer than 300 votes out of some 400,000 cast in 2024. Trump's imprint. Last year, the White House created Freedom 250, a public-private partnership to organize anniversary events despite the existence of America 250, a congressionally chartered commission that had spent years planning activities. Freedom's 250 marquee event is the Great American State Fair, a 2-week exposition on the National Mall. Trump held a campaign-style rally to kick off the fair and will deliver a second one on July 4th, drawing criticism that he is turning the nation's celebration into a political event. Several Democratic-led states and a number of musical acts refused to participate. In Bucks County, Tabitha DeAngelo said she was so dismayed by the direction of the country that she did not plan on celebrating July 4th. I love my country. I am a proud American, the 56-year-old college professor and former Democratic school board member said. But this version of the celebration does not feel like it's about America, but instead a celebration of Trump. Many in Bucks County are wrestling with questions that strike at the core of what it means to be an American. Are there still principles that unify the country? Jim Worthington, 69, a Trump supporter and health club owner, said he believes the longevity of America's existence is a marvel worth honoring no matter who is president. This is a celebration of 250 years of history, the greatest experiment in the history of the world, Worthington said. Doreen Stratton, an activist and writer in Doylestown, said her great-great-grandfather was among the few free black residents living in Philadelphia in 1776. Now she fears that years of progress are stalling under the Trump administration, which has rolled back some civil rights protections for minorities. I almost look at it like I'm in mourning, she said of Independence Day. The divided sentiments have left local organizers of July 4th events facing a challenging task: how to mark the holiday without alienating swaths of residents. Dick Kreider, whose nonprofit America Celebrates is hosting celebrations in New Hope, Pennsylvania, and neighboring Lambertville, New Jersey, said several people had sought reassurance that the program would be nonpartisan. I think that to let the celebration of our 250 go by without embracing it, regardless of your political stance, is a mistake, Kreider said. How we tell histories. Historians note that prior milestone anniversaries, also took place at tumultuous moments. In 1876, the country was coping with the fissures of the Civil War a decade earlier. In 1976, the Vietnam War and the Watergate scandal had shaken the faith in government. The story of some of the deepest moments of crisis in America were followed by moments of deepest change, said Yale's Gage. At Washington Crossing Historic Park in Bucks County, a stone tablet reminds visitors what occurred there in 1776, when George Washington led his troops through a Christmas night snowstorm across the Delaware River to launch a surprise attack on British allied German soldiers in New Jersey, turning the tide of the war. Leading up to the 250th, the park conducted research on the contributions of women, black soldiers, and civilians to effort the war, said Jennifer Martin, executive director of the nonprofit that oversees the park. It's important that we're telling accurate stories and that we are not allowing the political climate to influence how we tell histories, she said. John Gazeba, a retired police officer who has played Washington in Washington Crossing reenactments for more than 15 years, believes most Americans will embrace the moment, if only for a day. Maybe on July 5th, they'll go back to being angry and disenchanted about the country, he said. But I think on July 4th, they'll be here. Moving on now to some local news, road closures 2 hours ago. Linden Street in Normal, northbound Linden Street between Emerson Street and Virginia Avenue, will be closed effective immediately. The road closure is for water main installation. Southbound Linden will remain a single lane through the same area. Northbound traffic will be detoured east on Emerson Street to Main Street to Vernon Avenue. A map of the road closure can be viewed at arcg.is/U-D-V4PO. The road closure is expected to be completed by the end of July, weather permitting. All local access will be maintained during this time. For more information, you can call 309-454-9572. And once again, a map of the road closure can be viewed at arcg.is/U-D-V4PO. And for more information, you can call 309-454-9572. How time flies. 100 years ago, on this date, July 2nd of 1926, rooms which will be used for a detention home for girls have been fitted up in the apartment building of the country farm in accordance with a recommendation of the McLean County Board of Supervisors. Miss Belle McClure, who makes her home at the farm, will have charge of girls while at the home. 75 years ago on this date, in 1951, the Bloomington area was treated to a midsummer rarity Sunday night, a brilliant aurora borealis. The northern lights are usually thought of in connection with very cold weather and are most colorful in the Arctic regions. 50 years ago on this date in 1976, apparent low bids on the proposed 90-seat restaurant and cocktail lounge at the Bloomington Normal Airport totaled $163,222, nearly 25% above the architect's estimates. One apparent low bid on one of five parts of the project for heating, ventilating, and air conditioning was more than twice the estimate. 25 years ago on this date in 2001, a once-abandoned stretch of historic Old Route 66 continues to come to life. Normal Community High School teacher Fred Walk and his students began the revitalization several years ago. Initially, a linear park was planned for about a one-mile stretch south of Towanda. The group then persuaded the Illinois Department of Transportation to keep a bridge over Money Creek standing. That allowed the park to expand north toward Lexington. This summer, several students are creating 8 4x8 foot murals that will represent the 8 states Route 66 travels through. Today's Flick Fact. Question. Many hotels, skyscrapers, and other high-rise buildings skip a 13th floor because of superstition. But one of Central Illinois' best-known buildings never did. Do you know which one? Answer. State Farm's original corporate headquarters in downtown Bloomington, now being transformed into GJ Lofts, with 183 apartments, a Starbucks, and food hall, proudly stood 13 stories tall and didn't avoid it. In fact, according to one longtime State Farm legend founder, G.J. Merkel, considered the number lucky because his secretary and eventual second wife, Sylvia Caldwell Merkel, survived the sinking of the Titanic after boarding lifeboat number 13. Thank you for listening with us today. Once again, my name is Kayla Verhoeven, and I hope that you guys try to stay cool today and be safe, friends. Until next time for part 2 of the Pantograph, have a great day.